Good evening, dear listeners, and welcome to another chilling episode of Our Scary Stories. I am your host, your guide into the dark corners of imagination, the places where nightmares reside even in the daylight. Today's episode will take you into an unsettling realm, one where the absence of sound heralds an unimaginable terror. Can you hear that? No. Ah, the silence is already beginning. So curl up, lean in, and let us whisper directly into the depths of your soul. This is the final silence. The city stirred in the embrace of the morning light, its every sound a note in a familiar symphony. The roar of the garbage trucks, the impatient honks of cabbies, the shrill calls of far-off birds welcoming the dawn. The aroma of freshly brewed coffee wafted from homes and corner cafes, mingling with the salty scent of the ocean nearby. Yet, within the cacophony of daily life, something began to change. The city's sounds, one by one, started to lose their vibrancy, like colors fading from an old photograph. The barista steaming milk noticed the hiss of the machine soften into a whisper. Joggers in the park felt a peculiar calm as the usually chirpy birds sat silently in the trees. Car engines revved, but the sound was like the distant drumming of fingers on a far-off table. The alarm clocks set for 6:30 failed to ring in hundreds of households, leaving a dreamlike serenity hanging in the air. At first, people chalked it up to a power outage, a fluke, a day when technology had taken a collective pause. But as they spoke, their voices had the hollowness of a hollow log, a flatness that turned even laughter into a muffled snicker. As neighbors gathered in small clusters on street corners, each with their theories and bewildered expressions, John Thompson stepped out of his apartment building. A sound engineer by trade, John lived his life through the prisms of pitch, frequency, and timbre. He was a man whose ears were more sensitive than most, finely tuned instruments that caught the subtle undertones in the music of life. "What's going on?" asked Emily, his next-door neighbor, as she clumsily dropped her keys. They hit the ground with a dull thud, barely making a noise. "I mean, can you believe this? It's too weird." John picked up the keys and handed them back to her. "I have no idea, but I intend to find out." An idea was forming in the recesses of John's analytical mind, a theory so improbable that he hesitated even to consider it. Sounds hadn't just vanished, they'd been suppressed, swallowed whole by something he couldn't yet comprehend. Retreating back into his apartment, he booted up his audio analysis software, hooking up the microphones to capture the eerie silence that was enveloping the world. The spectral graph was flat, lifeless. But as he looked closer, John saw tiny fluctuations, like the heartbeat of some monstrous entity that lurked just beyond the threshold of human perception. His phone buzzed on the table. It was a video message from an unknown number. Heart pounding, John played the video, watching as a shadowy figure formed on the screen. It was indistinct, almost ephemeral, but its formlessness made it all the more unsettling. The video had no sound, yet John could see that the figure seemed to open a cavernous mouth, engulfing what looked like a shattering glass. And then, something extraordinary happened. The figure appeared to solidify, its outline becoming sharper, more real, as if it had been fed, strengthened by the sound it had consumed. A chill crawled up John's spine. The silence outside wasn't just a void, it was a warning. And whatever was responsible for it had just sent him a message. A message that sounded a lot like a threat, even if it made no sound at all. Staring at the screen, the air thick with a tension he could almost taste, John felt the dawn of a terrifying realization. The world hadn't just lost its sound, it had awakened something that hungered for more than just the ambient noise of everyday life. It was awake. It was listening, and it was getting stronger. The world was awash in a muted frenzy. Television news anchors struggled to vocally articulate the strangeness of it all, their words falling flat even as their expressions conveyed urgency. Governments issued statements that seemed to evaporate into the unsettling quiet. From laboratories to churches, scientists and spiritual leaders alike were baffled. Conspiracy theories rippled through social media, each one more unsettling than the last, while religious groups saw it as divine intervention, either a cosmic reprimand or a prelude to a momentous revelation. John Thompson had turned his apartment into a makeshift laboratory. Wires, microphones, and speakers were strewn about as if they had exploded from his computer. He had a hypothesis, as unnerving as it was groundbreaking. Sound hadn't simply vanished. It was being consumed. To test his theory, John decided he needed to venture into the city's underbelly, the quieter spaces where echoes went to die. Armed with a makeshift ultrasonic device, he took to the deserted alleys, bathed in the ethereal glow of street lamps, their light seemingly dimmer than before. The device was experimental, a sonic emitter that could generate frequencies higher than the human range of hearing. If sound was being consumed, then perhaps a frequency unpalatable to whatever was consuming it could offer a form of protection. As he walked, the quiet was thick, like fog, and it seemed to weigh down his every step. He felt as if the silence were watching him, breathing down his neck. And then he heard it, or rather, sensed it, a vibration, an oscillation in the air that made his skin tingle. He turned, and there it was, a shadowy entity, its form a shifting, indescribable shape, hanging in the air, as if woven from the night itself. Terror gripped him, a sensation so visceral it seemed to cut through the silence. Hands trembling, he activated his ultrasonic device. The entity recoiled, its form momentarily distorting, like a reflection in rippling water. Seizing the chance, John sprinted out of the alley, his pounding heart a silent drum in his chest. Inside a small, brightly lit art studio, Marie, a deaf artist, was lost in her work. She was painting feverishly, her brush strokes an attempt to capture an unsettling vision she couldn't shake. Mark, a physicist from the local university, watched her in awe. He had come to discuss a collaborative project, but found himself mesmerized by the urgency of her art. Both were startled when John burst into the studio. Marie looked up, eyes locking onto his. She had always been good at reading people, and in that instant, she knew something was horribly wrong. John quickly filled Mark in, avoiding unnecessary details but stressing the seriousness of his findings. We're not just dealing with a loss of sound. These entities are hunting, and they're not just after ambient noise. There's something else, something that makes us human, that they want. What could be more human than our voices? Mark asked, the weight of the question hanging in the silent room. Souls, John said, eyes locked onto Mark's. I think they're after our souls. Our essence has a resonance, a unique frequency, and these beings are devouring it. Marie, who had been following the conversation through quick glances and lip reading, now approached them with her finished painting. It depicted shadowy, monstrous beings that seemed to pulsate on the canvas, their forms almost alive. The entities were swallowing fragments of color that looked like human souls, each a unique hue of its own. John felt a shiver run down his spine. It was them, the monstrous entities, precisely as he had seen them, as if Marie had plucked the image right from his memory. We need to understand what we're dealing with, Mark said, staring at the haunting artwork. And fast. Because if we don't, he didn't need to finish the sentence. All three of them knew that if they couldn't figure this out, the silence that had fallen over the world would be the least of humanity's problems. The room was thick with the kind of tension that transcends words, fitting, given that words had lost their auditory presence. Marie's art studio had turned into an impromptu war room. Sheets of paper covered the table, each filled with hastily sketched ideas and formulas, and the air was heavy with the unspoken knowledge that they were humanity's reluctant, unofficial defense team. The way these entities reacted to the ultrasonic device, Mark began, rubbing his forehead as he leaned over the table, it reminded me of how creatures here react to scarcity of resources. What if these beings are from a dimension where sound, any form of vibrational energy, is like food? Food. Marie signed, her hands shaping the word with a sense of disbelief. She caught the word by reading Mark's lips and confirmed her understanding by signing it back. John nodded, his eyes narrowed in thought. Yes, sustenance. And if we extend that analogy, what's the most succulent, most unique form of vibrational energy humans have? Their souls. Mark's face turned ashen. I remember a fringe experiment during my doctoral days about the frequency of souls. It was dismissed as pseudoscience, but it posited that each human soul has a unique vibrational signature. What if these beings are tuned to those frequencies? That's how they find us. Marie felt her skin prickle at the thought. Her fingers danced in the air, shaping urgent, quivering signs. Can we change our soul's frequency? John shook his head. We can't change it, but maybe we can mask it. Camouflage it under layers of other frequencies. Mark bolted upright. An array of random frequency generators. If we can create a device that bombards the environment with various frequencies, we might be able to drown out the unique frequencies of human souls. With a sense of united purpose, they set to work. Marie's art studio became an assembly line of frenzied creativity, the air thickening with the smell of solder, acrylic paint, and anticipation. 2 hours later, their device was ready. It was a small box filled with circuit boards, dials, and tiny speakers. Mark called it the Soul Mask. "We need to test this, and we need to test it now," John said, the urgency palpable in the room despite the absence of his voice's timbre. Leaving Marie's studio, they headed to a small, secluded park. Night had settled in fully, making the trees look like ink blots against the dark sky. It felt like the silence was watching them, sizing them up, and their hopes rested on a box no bigger than a loaf of bread. John activated the Soul Mask. The air seemed to thicken as the device hummed to life, emitting frequencies beyond their range of hearing, but that filled the atmosphere with a subtle charge. For a moment, nothing happened. Then they sensed it, an uneasy ripple in the surroundings. It was as though the very fabric of reality shivered. From the shadowy recesses of the trees, a monstrous being emerged. It paused, seemingly disoriented, its form flickering as if struggling to maintain its shape. Then, in a spine-chilling moment, it solidified. Its form coalesced into something darker, more definite than before. It looked directly at them, as if seeing them clearly for the first time. Mark's eyes widened, his lips forming a silent curse. Marie's hands clenched tightly, her signing stilled by a terror that needed no words. John felt his blood turn to ice. A monstrous being had evolved. It could see through their camouflage, and in its indescribable form, they all sensed something horrifyingly new, a smirk, a silent laugh at their feeble human efforts. And they knew, in that moment of chilling clarity, that the stakes had just gotten unimaginably higher. The sense of failure hung heavy over the trio, a burden that no words, spoken or signed, could alleviate. It was a leaden silence, thickening the air in Marie's studio where they'd retreated, punctuated only by the frenzied brush strokes as Marie took her unease out on canvas. Mark stared intently at a laptop screen filled with scrolling data, as if the answers could be calculated, deduced. John clenched and unclenched his fists, his face a reflection of the sinking realization that their best efforts had been thwarted. But beyond the walls of Marie's sanctuary, the world unraveled more dramatically. Reports started streaming in, even if the silence rendered the urgency of newscasters mute. Text alerts, emergency emails, and muted TV screens all told a tale of chaos. The entities had started to swarm in larger numbers, forming silent vortexes in crowded places, malls, subways, schools. People vanished into swirls of shadowy static, their faces etched with silent screams. While scrolling through the updates, Mark's face turned an even paler shade of white. "Guys, they got Peter," he mouthed, his eyes meeting John and Marie's gaze with the sorrow of loss. Peter had been a mentor to Mark, an elder physicist who encouraged his unorthodox theories. John felt his stomach tighten, the weight of responsibility heavier than ever. Marie's hands hesitated in the air, her words incomplete, as if the signs themselves couldn't convey the depth of their collective despair. News continued to roll in. Governments, desperate to regain control, announced that they would deploy sonic weapons, designed to project sound at damaging frequencies. The announcement inspired a fleeting moment of hope among the populace, a silent cheer and a world muted of applause. The strategy backfired horrifically. The sonic booms seemed to feed the entities rather than disperse them. They grew larger, more substantial, their forms less indistinct and more menacing. Within hours, a text alert declared the operation a failure. Anger boiled over in Marie's eyes as she signed vehemently, "They're feeding them, making them stronger." "And not by accident," Mark added, sharing a classified email he'd received from an anonymous whistleblower. It alleged that a government official had known about the entity's appetite for sound and had been trying to weaponize them. "Fools playing God," John mouthed, his eyes reflecting a fire that his voice couldn't convey. The stress began to eat at them, and cracks appeared in their unity. Marie believed they should go public with the whistleblower's information, rallying public opinion against the official's betrayal. Mark, ever the scientist, insisted that they first gather irrefutable proof. John, feeling the clock ticking, argued for a more direct approach, to find the official and confront him. Before they could resolve their differences, a new dread filled the room. Shadows lengthened unnaturally, coalescing into a form so dark it seemed to suck in even the ambient light. John had only seconds to register the entity's presence before he was enveloped, his world turning into an abyss of impenetrable blackness. A sense of displacement gripped him, as though he were plummeting through layers of reality. He found himself in an otherworldly realm, a nightmarish landscape of swirling, chaotic darkness. Whispers without sound seemed to reverberate through him. He realized he was in their dimension, the belly of an unfathomable beast. And in that moment, his fear gave way to an even more chilling thought. They had let him see this place. They wanted him to know. He was in their world now, and the horror of that realization eclipsed everything that had come before. John felt a terrifying stillness around him in this alien world, an absence that went beyond the mere absence of sound. There was an existential silence, a lack of life force that permeated the air, ground, and the very fabric of this dimension. He stood in an environment that could only be described as barren, a dying world starving for the vibrancy of sound. It was a realm of desolation, with structures that seemed to be crumbling under the weight of their own emptiness. As he navigated through the shadowy contours, he felt their gaze upon him. The entities were more defined here, their forms resembling grotesque parodies of life as he knew it. Yet in those forms, he saw desperation, even suffering. It was a revelation that gripped him with both empathy and horror. They're refugees, he realized, a swell of complex emotions roiling within him. Exiles in their own world, pushed to the edge of existence. That empathy, however, withered quickly as he considered the means they'd adopted. The harvesting of human souls, the consumption of entire worlds to satiate their hunger. As he confronted this duality, his surroundings shifted once again, as if sensing his thoughts. A force propelled him back through the layers of reality he'd plummeted through earlier. John found himself back in Marie's studio, surrounded by the concerned faces of his friends. But something was different and complete. Mark and Marie both noticed it. The spark in his eyes had dimmed. A part of his soul had stayed behind in that terrible realm, stripping away layers of his emotion, leaving a mechanical objectivity. "We need to send them back," John said, his voice flat, dispassionate. "Back to their dying world." His urgency set the pace for the trio. Mark outlined an audacious plan to create a reverse vortex, a tear in the fabric of their own world, and shunt the entities back to their dimension. But to power such a vortex, they would need an immense amount of energy, a catalyst that could only come from a human's unique soul frequency. The room fell into a silence thicker than any they'd felt since the world lost its voice. It was a silence of grim understanding. One of them would have to be the sacrifice to make this work. Just as John was about to voice his willingness to be that sacrifice, Marie stepped in front of him. Her eyes were resolute, her posture defiant as she signed, "I'll do it." John and Mark looked at her in disbelief. "Why? Why you?" John mouthed, his lessened emotional range struggling to convey his concern. Marie smiled softly and touched her ears. "I'm deaf, not devoid of perception. I hear in ways you can't imagine, vibrations, frequencies, the feel of sound. My soul frequency is unique, vibrant, more powerful. I can be the catalyst we need." The revelation struck them both like a thunderbolt in a cloudless sky. Marie had a perception, an ability that transcended mere hearing, and she was willing to risk it all for their world. For a brief moment, even in the suffocating silence that cloaked them, John felt a surge of hope, tinged with an emotion he thought he'd lost, love. And it terrified him more than any entity ever could. In the confined space of Mark's underground lab, the trio worked with unyielding focus. Amidst a tangle of wires, circuits, and esoteric components, they assembled the Vortex Machine, a device more speculative than scientific, teetering on the boundaries of possibility. Mark adjusted the calibration, ensuring that the vortex would target the right dimension. John monitored the power levels, his demeanor focused but also haunted, forever altered by his journey to the entity's realm. Marie finalized the input console where her unique soul frequency would be transformed into the catalyst. As they stepped back to regard their creation, each knew the magnitude of what lay ahead. A flicker of uncertainty crossed their faces, but it vanished as quickly as it had come, replaced by an unspoken pact of resolve. The device was moved to an expansive, abandoned theater, a grand setting for a grand confrontation. The enormity of the auditorium seemed to amplify the gravity of their silence. They activated the Vortex Machine, its core glowing with a subdued azure light, as Marie connected herself to the input console. One by one, they started to appear. The entities materialized like dark smudges in the air, outlines becoming more defined as they drew closer to the vortex, drawn to the promise of a feast of sound and soul. The room filled with a tension that was as unbearable as it was silent. Every eye was on Marie, taking a deep breath that resounded in no one's ears but felt in everyone's hearts. Marie pressed the activation button. A burst of light exploded from the vortex machine, enveloping her and shooting upwards toward the cavernous ceiling. The entities were sucked in, spiraling in a dance of unwilling ascension, disappearing into the terror and reality. The light dimmed, and the machine powered down. Marie collapsed, her body still intact, but her eyes carrying a weary emptiness. It was done. The entities had been sent back to their dying world. Yet as John and Mark scanned their surroundings, they realized the silence remained. The world had not reverted to its previous state. It was Marie who first noticed the change, a subtle shift in the texture of their silence. She spoke, and they heard her, not with their ears, but with their souls. Over the following days, people worldwide discovered this newfound intimacy. Although the world remained absent of ambient sound, human voices resonated soul to soul. Conversations took on a profound depth, as if every word were a secret shared in quiet sanctity. John found himself stepping back from the realm of professional audiology, taking up positions in community forums, advocating for the nuances of this new way of life. His conversations with Mark and his shared silent moments with Marie became his most treasured experiences. The man who had once obsessed over sound now found solace in the rich tapestry of human connection. As he walked through a park, watching a group of children playing a silent game of catch, their laughter resonating directly in the souls of their parents, John couldn't help but reflect on the monumental events they had all lived through. Our senses, he mused, are not what define our reality, but merely color it. The essence of existence, it seems, isn't about what we perceive but how we connect. And so, John continued on his quiet path. Surrounded by a world forever changed yet intimately familiar, a world of new silences and soul deep resonances, a world where the final silence had spoken the loudest. And so, dear listeners, we come to the end of a tale that has rendered us speechless, that has shown us the other side of silence, the terror it can hold and the strange intimacy it can birth. Do you find yourself listening more closely now, even to the silence? You never know what might be lurking there, waiting to consume more than just the quiet. Thank you for joining us on our scary stories, and until next time, may your dreams be anything but silent. This is our Scary Stories signing off for tonight.